Let's go ahead and get started with today's call. I'm Bruce Whitehurst with the Virginia Bankers Association. Thank you for taking time to join us. We are so pleased to have nearly 300 participants in this important session. Today's event in recognition of Black History Month is being co-sponsored by the VBA Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Council. Before we launch into the panel, I'd like to take just a moment to discuss the Council and other VBA initiatives in the DEI space. As part of our 2019 to 2021 VBA strategic plan, the VBA created the goal to assist members in building a more diverse future leadership. We first convened a group of VBA members in 2019 to form the VBA DEI Council to help guide us in the creation of DEI initiatives and programming for member banks. The council, made up of 26 members, is a key driver of our DEI efforts and serves as a sounding board for the VBA as we work to support our member banks in their DEI efforts. Since then, we've created a variety of initiatives as well as resources for banks as you begin to further your DEI programs and efforts at your own organizations. The VBA and the ABA partnered to launch our first ever virtual DEI summit for bankers in November 2020 and held a second summit in May of 2021. These events were an important part of continuing a meaningful dialogue on fostering positive change in the industry, and we were pleased to have participants from 43 states. Our next summit will be held virtually on September 15th, so save the date. In our most recent effort, the VBA Education Foundation has partnered with the Virginia Foundation for Community Colleges to establish the Virginia Banking Fellows Program, a statewide scholarship opportunity for underrepresented students. In addition to the six fellows supported by the VBA Education Foundation, and thanks to the many member banks who support our annual fund, six VBA member banks are also sponsoring an additional fellow. So this fall, we'll have 12 students from across the state in the first year, a $120,000 commitment from the industry, which is really exciting. And then last but not least, the VBA has developed a series of programming aimed at the advancement of women in the industry. In addition to the Women in Banking Conference we've held the past 10 years, we also are in the second official year of our Women's Mentorship Program, a 10-month program for mentor-mentee duos from the same bank. Last year, we also launched a quarterly newsletter called Elevate, designed for women in the industry and those who support them. There's a link to sign up in the chat. Coming on March 8th, a month from today, the VBA and the Executive Women in Banking Peer Group is putting together a virtual program in recognition of an International Women's Day, so stay tuned for more information on that. For information on these efforts and more, please regularly check the DEI page on our website. You'll find that the link to that in the chat as well. Now let's get to the main event. Today we'll hear a conversation on diversity, equity, and inclusion in the banking industry with Tamika Brewer-Johnson of Atlantic Union Bank, Thomas Claiborne of Chesapeake Bank, Denise Counts of Town Bank, and Dr. Paul Spradley of Dollar Bank. We will ask Tamika to introduce herself and have the panelists do the same in a moment. But in the meantime, their bios can be found in the chat. Our panelists will discuss how their banks are recognizing Black History Month, impactful changes they've seen as a result of their bank's focus on DEI, how their banks are ensuring that DEI initiatives remain an ongoing priority, and more. We'll have time for questions and dialogue, so please be ready and willing to share your thoughts with us at the appropriate time. We appreciate anyone willing to be interactive with us throughout this event. We'd love to see your faces and have you unmute for your questions or place them in the chat at the appropriate times. I'll now turn it over to today's moderator, Tamika Brewer-Johnson. Tamika?
Good morning. So, wow, it's so good to see so many faces that I recognize and names that I recognize. I definitely feel like I'm amongst friends today, especially these great panelists that are with us today. I can't wait to hear what they have to say, but I'm going to start off by introducing myself, and also I'm going to share what our company is doing for Black History Month and why I'm passionate about DEI. My name is Tamika Brewer-Johnson. I'm with Atlantic Union Bank. I am the head of teammate engagement. In my role, I'm in the HR department, and so we are focused on teammate relations as well as DEI, and also we're the HR business partners for the company. What we're doing for Black History Month, we have a fabulous DEI council. I can't say, but so many things, they're just wonderful. And they have put together some really great things for Black History Month. They started off with us with a focus on Black trailblazers and invited the rest of the company to share who their trailblazers are. And that has been a very engaging conversation. I also have to shout out one more group, which is our Blacksburg branch, because they took it upon themselves to do a daily Black history question in their branch. And so customers have access to it, and so do our teammates. We also across the company have monitors that have a Black history banner on it. And then as we're also doing some unconscious bias training, it'll be ending around the month of February as well. Why am I passionate about DEI? Couple of reasons. I'll be very brief about the first one. One of them is I stand on the shoulders of very strong people. My grandmother, my mother's mother, she is a very loving and passionate person. And the only time I saw her feisty in church or anywhere was when she felt something wasn't fair. She felt that there was somebody that was not being treated the way they needed to be treated. And I think I kind of picked that up from her, so I've always had that. And then secondly is, I guess just like many, I know what it's like to feel not included and be excluded, and I know what it feels like to be included. And what makes me passionate is because I know that you get 100% out of me when I feel included, and I see that in other people as well. When they feel like they're included, they're in the room, they're not just invited to join the room, but they're invited to join the conversation. And that makes a huge difference. So that makes me passionate about DEI. So Thomas, I'm going to kick it off to you to introduce yourself and share the same questions.
Thank you. My name is Thomas Claiborne. I'm with Chesapeake Bank. I'm the current chairperson of our Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Committee. I most recently was the retail regional manager for Williamsburg. I've just transitioned into the role of community outreach officer. And essentially that role is we're establishing, it's brand new for our organization, and we're just trying to use our resources and our benefits to actually connect the bank with the communities that we all serve. As far as what we're doing for Black History Month, we're passionate about small business. That's one of our major things. We want to elevate and boost small businesses in all of our regions and our communities. This month, we're focused on Black-owned businesses. We're trying to recognize small Black-owned businesses in each of our regions just to give them that boost and that recognition, because they play a significant part in what we're doing in our communities, and we want them to have that recognition. In addition to that, we're also preparing a post about Maggie Walker, one of the local banking pioneers here in Virginia. So we're going to be excited to share that with not just our employees, but also our customer base. The last part, why am I passionate about DEI? Well, it's personal for me. I in my faith, I believe that I'm supposed to love God and love people. And that connection of loving people and being able to relate that to what I do at work. On the financial side, working with people and their situations and helping them to improve their financial standing has always been something I've been passionate about. When I've gotten in contact with our company to work for DEI, I got to bring that with the people I work with daily. We were talking before about how we're joined by family here on the call. Just that connection with the people you work with daily to show them that you value them, that you see the benefit for who they are, and give them the opportunity to bring their full selves to work. That value and that, that connection helps you to build an environment where everyone just has that, I don't want to say that love, but unfortunately I got to say it, that love for what they do and who they're around. It helps me to be mission-minded while I'm at work. And I think that's something I'm passionate about. And I think I'm excited that I get the opportunity to do it here.
Okay, Denise, love to hear from you.
Good morning. It is a privilege to be with you all this morning. And again, to see so many friendly faces. My name is Denise Counts, and I'm the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Officer here at Town Bank. In my role, I help Town Bank fulfill our mission of creating a warm sense of belonging here for each and every individual that comes into our office locations or visits us in the branches or here on the campus across our footprint. We know that everyone deserves to feel safe, seen, and valued when they come to work. And our focus on DEI helps us to leverage the engagement of our team members while our leaders want to really understand and make certain that everyone is feeling respected and they have a voice and opportunity for growth here. What are we doing for Black History Month? We are posting on social media any events across our footprint that is happening in the different areas. We're also, our Noir Networking Circle is hosting a series of conversations with team members across our country, our company, because we know that open dialogue often leads to education, information, and just breakdown of miscommunication. Our executive sponsors sent out a company-wide email just welcoming and inviting and encouraging our entire company to participate in these conversations, to hear what our teammates have to say about Black History Month, and to really reflect on what Black History Month means to them. Where does my passion come from? Simply, I love what I do. I love what I do every day, connecting people. And I am so fortunate to be able to work here at a company that I have had the privilege of calling home for the past 17 years. I personally value relationships and making connections. And in this DEI space, I work every day to be the type of leader who fosters fairness within my organization and within the different communities that we serve.
Great. Paul, but last but not least.
Well, good morning, everybody. My name is Dr. Paul David Spradley. I'm the Vice President of Diversity and Inclusion here at Dollar Bank. We are located in both Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, is where our headquarters is, but we have a growing population in Hampton Roads, Virginia, and we also have a presence in Cleveland and Canton, Ohio. So we're doing several things this month, including a lunch and learn that's focusing on equity and finance. Like the others on the call, we have a social media campaign that's where we're sending out something every Monday and every Friday that's going out to our community on all of our social media platforms. But one of the things I'm most excited about is we're creatively retelling stories of our earliest Black customers in creative ways. And so we may have an opportunity to talk a bit more about that later, but that's something that's really exciting that we're doing, where we're our customers from 1865 who were Black Americans had incredible stories, and we're bringing those stories back to life. I'm personally passionate about diversity, equity, inclusion because I've been doing it for a while. I'm addicted to the results of effective inclusion. And so my mission, very similar to Thomas, is to help people love their neighbor better. So that work for me is passion work, it's mission work. And I think that there are healthy ways that that can be done. And I also don't believe that people want to be separated and want to have oppressive practices. They just don't know where to start. So I like to think of myself as a tool to help bridge action and sort of belief.
Great. I absolutely feel everybody's passion here. And I'm glad to hear all the things that are going on at the different banks. I'm sure there's other things going on at other banks that hopefully we'll have a chance to hear about at a later time. But I would like to hear a little bit more about why it's important to dedicate this time in February to Black history and recognizing the significance that Black history and the Black community has contributed to American history. And Thomas, we'll start with you.
I think it's important because it's a part of American history, period. It's not one that I got a lot of opportunity to learn about when I was younger. And it's something, unfortunately, that has been neglected in the past, but I think the value of it as we learn more, and I don't want to speak to any specific things I've learned because I've been trying to discuss and figure out which ones I should share, but I'm going to leave something out that's important. It has the opportunity to not only change perceptions, but to show people opportunities that are there. It gives you insight to what can be done because of what's already been done for us. It has been such a foundation of success that unfortunately doesn't get the recognition it should, that can really prop us up for so much more. And the positive thing is that the more we educate and share, the more it changes perceptions and paradigms of what the Black community is, because it gives you an enlightenment about kind of just redirecting people to see that there's so much more than you already know.
That's right. It's funny you were saying that about, it's hard to pick one element, one person, one thing to talk about because it's so vast, and it's Black history is involved in the things we do every day. So Denise, I'd love to hear from you next.
I'm shaking my head in agreement with you because everything that we do, it somehow or another relates back to some inventor, you know, some historical person in our past. So to me, Black History Month takes us beyond the history books and helps us to celebrate really the beauty of diversity, period. An example is we have all studied about Thomas Edison and the light bulb. But have you heard about a man named Lewis Howard Latimer, who created a carbon filament to make the light bulb last longer and safer to use? So focusing on Black achievements is intended, in my opinion, to unite us, to help us learn more about different cultures, different backgrounds, different people. And hopefully it will help us all to understand how we are all connected and find value in our similarities.
Great. That's a great, great perspective. Paul, why don't you join us?
Yeah. So we've got colleagues and neighbors right now who feel that because they feel a sense of shame around the past that we should not talk about history. And that's frustrating because, you know, that's excluding our story. So we work together, right? Like in an organization, it's a multicultural workplace. And you don't want to know anything about me or like how I've gotten to this point, right? Like but I have to know everything about you. So that doesn't feel like it makes sense for our organization to be the best version of ourselves if we're not learning about each other. One of the things that I think is very important is just the shifting of narrative, right? Like, so Black Americans are incredibly capable of leadership, of innovation, of science, of finance. And if we don't see that, then that narrative can quickly become that Black Americans can't lead this bank or this organization because I've never seen it before, or Black Americans can't be a loan officer because I've never seen it before. So if we can see examples of success, not just in the month of February, but over the course of the year in our media, in our publications, in our own organizations, who we're highlighting in our marketing materials, if we can see representation, it's incredibly important for not only our employee base, but our customers as well.
Yeah, you bring up a very important point, you know, about representation. And I think it's important to all of us that work in the current work environment, those of us who are looking to grow our careers, to the students and the generations that come behind us, that they're able to see exactly, they can see that, you know, someone that looks like them can serve in any capacity. They're smart enough, they have enough education, and there's so many things that they can plan to do or be prepared to do, and know that they're not the only one who strive to do it. And there's people that can mentor them to move in that direction. Very good. Also, you talked about multiculturalism, a little bit of a tongue twister there, because this is not all just about, you know, this conversation is about Black history. But in our workplace, it's important that everybody is included. As Denise said, you know, with, you know, the bulb, somebody had to build the filament to go in it for it to work. So all of that is connected, and how connected we are in our organizations is very important in how we come up with solutions, because there's so many different experiences. Why don't we start with you, actually, Paul, talking about, you know, from a multiculturalism perspective in your organization, what are you doing? What's your organization doing, especially considering some of the challenges we've had over the last few years?
Yeah, so I have the pleasure of telling Dollar Bank has a rich history, right? So in 1865, when the bank opened, the founders understood that it would be a bank that served everyone, every person, for just having a dollar. And that meant that was two big things at the time. One, it usually took more, about $50 to start a savings account at that time. But to open a bank account with $1 meant that if I'm only making a dollar a day, then I'm not hurting my family by opening and taking this $1 and starting this account. But that also meant that in 1865, years before the Emancipation Proclamation or in the Civil War, that Black Americans, that immigrants, that women could bank with us. And so part of what we're doing to talk about that, and internally in our cultures, we have a museum that highlights our history of how we founded and how that is still very much a part of our belief today, this idea that every person has value at Dollar Bank. And so we try to live that practice out and who we're lending to. And there's incredible opportunity to do that better. But that's one of the things that is part of our onboarding process, is just knowing a bit about our history. One of the things that I think that organizations could be doing, and I think it's a great first place, is just creating a safe space to try new things. So often, you know, the finance industry, the banking industry is built on, this is how we've always done things. And even if they come up with a new way of saying that those words, there are a ton of reasons for a person or an organization that they can come up with not to start, right? Like not to reach out to this Hispanic community, because I've never done it before, not to learn how to recruit at an HBCU, because I've never done it before. But we have Google in 2022, right? And so there's no reason not to begin, or even to figure out who can start to help you take that first step. And finally, I would say, you know, as far as being intentional around multiculturalism, we have to get to a place where we're unapologetically amplifying underrepresented people. So in your lending, in your hiring, what does it mean for you to say, I'm going to be intentional and look for, because I know that there's qualified candidates out there. Doing less than that is essentially being okay with the idea that I have this belief that there are not any qualified candidates. I have this belief that I can't lend to this community because it's a bad investment, right? Like being intentional and unapologetically amplifying underrepresented people in all areas of the organization.
Great. Yeah, I will say, I didn't know much about your bank, Dollar Bank, but I did look it up probably about a couple weeks ago, and I saw the history information you have on your, probably spent about an hour out there reading the different histories of your customers. It's pretty great. Yeah. But what you said about, you know, Googling, you know, it's just that simple. It does not mean you have to have this perfect plan put together to start somewhere. We just got to start somewhere. Our organization started somewhere years ago with the diversity internship program. It was just a one place to start, and we didn't have the plan all together or all laid out, but we started somewhere. Denise, would you like to share on this question?
Well, also, Tamika, to that point, understanding that we all need grace, because there will be missteps along the way. But when you have that grace within your organization to say, okay, you know what, this might not have worked, and so let's just try this. It's the importance of the networking circles, just to have a communication pipeline of different people that you can talk to that may be living in the community. Looking at your board to see who you might be able to partnership with, local HBCUs or traditional colleges. So, you know, Paul says, being intentional, now you're being intentional on who you're communicating with and who you're talking to and who you are going out in the community, because as bankers, we all prospect. We all looking for relationships. We are forming partnerships. So another way to do that is just, again, with the conversation, having that dialogue to get to know people. Because once we start getting to know each other, that just, I mean, it just gives us so many ins and just gives us access to so many different opportunities so that we can learn what we're doing or what we're not doing inside of the communities.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that we were talking about with DEI, you can't talk about DEI without thinking about diversity of thought. All these different cultures bring diversity of thought, as well as geography, different coming from different companies. You know, we all come with experiences. Thomas, why don't you talk to us a little bit about, you know, what your company does to encourage diversity of thought, and also what kind of feedback mechanisms you use related to that?
Certainly. I just want to echo what we were talking about before as well, because I think that those points were made were super important in the sense that we haven't stepped out that far being new to DEI. But when we're talking about diversity of thought, it's something we've kind of jumped into with both feet. We had the opportunity as part of our strategic plan to focus on innovation. We said we want to focus on innovation as an organization. And the means in which we did that is we opened it up to every employee to participate and share insight and idea. And the focus was called Bright Ideas. It's a nice tag, had a little light bulb and everything. But the focus really was for everyone to talk about what we could do. And we've seen innovation come through process change. We've seen innovation come through eliminating steps that weren't required because we found efficiencies. We've seen a revitalization from our team, feeling like they're being heard. And when you tell someone that their opinion not only matters, but has been used to make change, you see a connection from the entire company being focused on how we can improve the organization. And that connection is contagious and people get excited about it and they want to participate more and more. The idea was for innovation, but what it did, what gave us a synergy where we're all focused and moving in the same direction. And that's what inclusion really comes to be about. It's been quite exciting how that took place. In addition to that, we've done surveys from diversity, equity, and inclusion to see how we're moving forward. We have our follow-up survey coming up this year to see what we're doing and not only how it's being received, but are we doing enough? Is there an opportunity? Are there different things that need to be focused on that we may not be looking at? We've also tied in, asked for volunteers when we're developing a program or initiative through DEI. We have focus groups that will sit and give us direct feedback, brutally honest direct feedback, because we asked for it. And it's super helpful in helping us avoid some pitfalls. Because when you're trying to move something forward, you don't want to stumble over your feet or over a concern that could cause someone to put up a roadblock or just a wall where they're not open to that change. So these things have all kind of tied together, but they've given us the opportunity for every person in the organization to feel like not only that they have a voice, but that that voice is being heard.
Great. Yeah, well, you talked about being revitalized, being heard, and then I added being seen. That's the piece that's really important, is for people not to just be there, but to be heard and to be seen. You know, and one of the things I think we talk a lot about is how do we measure what we're doing? And you were talking about some different types of feedback mechanisms that you have in place. Does anyone else have any ideas about things they're doing at their bank and how they're able to measure the work that they're doing?
Yeah, so I'm sorry, go ahead, Denise.
No, go ahead.
Well, and Tamika, not to throw a wrench in things. I'm going to do something a little off the cuff here, but because I just want to show how simple it is just to start the process, right? So we've got 230 people that are on this chat right now. And so I would ask if everybody could just write, what's your favorite season of the year in the chat? Summer, fall, winter, or spring, right? Summer, fall, winter, or spring. What's your favorite season? Write it in the chat. A bunch of summers and falls. Nobody likes winter. Okay.
I haven't seen one yet.
I haven't seen one. I've seen fall, spring, fall, winter.
Winter. Oh, I was getting ready to say, I like winter. I'm from Louisiana, so that's just hot. So I love winter and fall months.
So we just got, it looks like 100 and some responses in a few seconds, just from asking a question. And that information, we saw that the winter, for instance, is not a popular time. So we might want to avoid doing a group thing for this organization in the winter, just because it's not people's favorite time of the year. And it was simple, right? And so when Thomas is talking about just getting data, like we're doing things like pulse surveys. So a lot of times people are nervous about the big climate survey because on the back end of that, there's always work, right? But you could do pulse surveys. There's little things you could do once a quarter where you're just asking your entire organization a question around the culture, right? Like on a scale from 1 to 5, do you feel included? Do you feel like your voice is being heard? Do you feel like, and then you could do that and get folks into the habit of asking these questions. And if you are able, if you have the resources, then do your big climate survey. You do your big assessment where you're asking, you know, the organization's going through 50 questions or so. My supervisor, Stephanie Herring, she brought a tool to the bank called Ethics Point by Navix that not only allows employees to share concerns anonymously, but also employees can make recommendations to improve their practices and their workflow. So they might be, you know, a frontline employee and they have this really incredible idea, but they're afraid to say it. So they can anonymously put it into this tool, Ethics Point, and HR will then bring it to the management and discuss if this is something that could happen, right? So I think giving people love to feel valued from their voice, right? Like, so being seen and heard is coming up again, that concept. It doesn't have to be a big deal. You just have to start and just do it. And I think looking at little ways that you can get people involved, using the chat function, like making sure that people have a voice, making sure that people that don't want to speak out in a group still have the opportunity to communicate how they're feeling within the organization. They may not want to say that in front of the team, but is there another mechanism in which you can get that information? So I think that that's some of the information. And then for folks who are maybe new, start with your demographic data, right? Like as far when you're talking about like how do you measure, you could set simple goals just by understanding who's in your organization and then saying we want to increase this by 2%, right? Like a really low number just so that you understand that you could work towards something.
Great. Yeah, that we weren't prepared for that. Thank you, Paul. You just showed how simple it was. Denise, you wanted to add something.
No, I mean, I think Paul, a great example of just something simple. We launched in networking circles, employee resource groups, and these are just safe, another mechanism, a safe space where people can come and voice ideas. But also if they don't want to share in, like Paul said, in an open space, that way they have connections to our networking circle chairs. They have connection to our executive sponsors. Our leadership has also said, give us a call. We have an open line. But for those who are, you know, a little squeamish and just really don't want to go to executive leadership, we really focus in our networking circles on safe spaces, communication, being non-judgmental, and just really have a learning lens. Come and learn about different cultures, different backgrounds, different people, and leave any judgment outside. You know, come with an open mind. So we have found that our networking circles have become a real safe haven and a safe space for people to voice concerns while looking for positive solutions.
Great. Yeah, that's a very good point, you know, and you talked a little bit about executive leadership as well. And I just want to ask you this question, Denise, specifically, you know, your bank's leadership, what are they doing to ensuring the DEI initiative is ongoing and is a priority internally and externally?
Thank you, Tamika. In my opinion, really, they just show up. They're there. They ask questions. What do we need to do? Where do we need to be? They're participating in our networking circles. They're participating in our ERGs. We had a community town hall and they were there. We have a DEI council, and our council represents our leadership across our company because we want to hear what's going on in mortgage, in investments, in our insurance department. So at each leader, we didn't have to twist anybody's arms and say, you know, would you come and participate in this DEI council? They wanted to hear what our colleagues and what we call them our family teams. They want to know what they're saying, what their concerns are. So they show up. They ask me. I have support from our CEO and president, and really wanting to hear about any challenges or any opportunities. They supported our networking circles. We launched them last year. We have 5 active networking circles within our company. And again, if they are highly, people come and they participate in them. And they want to hear about whether it's our pride group or our women's group or our networking circle, which has a focus on our African-American family members. So they want to hear the concerns. And just like any company, I am accountable for presenting the data. So we analyze, we review the data, and we discuss it to say, you know, what are we doing in our hiring, our recruiting, and our retaining as far as our talent acquisition managers? Who are we going out to when we're visiting our HBCUs? When we're looking at our traditional colleges and universities, are we connecting with the DEI officers that are there? Who knows the students that are on campus? So we're making our recruiting and our hiring intentional. And like you said, Tamika, it's not just Black, white. Where's our LGBTQ plus community? Where are our Asian communities at? I spoke with a gentleman at a healthcare, and knowing your definition of diversity is so important because so many people think diversity is white, Black, when it's so much more. The dimensions of diversity encompass so much more than just race and ethnicity. And last thing, our leaders put our DEI initiative in our strategic plan back in 2019. I'm a firm believer that if your leaders are not supportive of your DEI efforts, it's not going to be a priority in your company because your leaders are the influencers They're the decision makers and they're the ones that can drive change. So it's got to be of utmost importance. And I know it is here.
Yeah, that's great. You know, what we call it, call in our organization, walking the talk. So Absolutely. It's not just talking about what we're going to do, but it really is following through. And the, as you mentioned, being intentional, I've heard that word several times throughout this conversation is about being intentional. Well, great. It's been great talking with you all, but we know when Bruce shows up, that means our time is up. And it's time to move into Q&A. So Bruce, I'll hand it back over to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Tamika and Denise, Thomas, Paul. What a wonderful conversation. I think we could probably go on a whole lot more with this, but let me start with a question or two and invite others to add questions to the chat. We've got about 10 minutes, so we'll get into a couple of questions. And then we are, as I think we may have mentioned, we'll be sharing this recording back out. So you'll have that to refer to as well. So the first question is, diversity at a lower level is, in quotes, easy. What steps have you taken to ensure diversity is reflected in your bank's executive body? And, you know, what how do we continue to provide diversity at all levels of the organization? Tamika, why don't you take that one first, since you've been such a great moderator and you haven't put yourself in first spot yet?
Sure, I'm happy to take that one. Actually, I was just having this conversation just last Friday with our head of talent acquisition, but that is correct. I think it does feel like, you know, the first level of the organization or early levels of the organization, there's more diversity than it is at the top. And it is absolutely accurate, you know, but we have to be intentional. I know specifically for our company, we're very intentional about certain levels of the organization, the higher levels, executive levels, senior levels of the organization. There is an expectation that we have diverse candidate pools, that there is very much intentional and we don't move forward without diverse candidate pools. And that is something that that does take a little bit of courage to say that we will not move forward. We will not just choose the person who we know across the street because we know them, if and actually not look at it in a wider perspective and look for diversity across the slate. And also looking at how we look, how we have these conversations about who's the right fit for our organization. Because I think it's kind of it's back far that we talk about, you know, about fit, because experience is also important. And our organizations and our communities are becoming more diverse. So if our organizations can't become more diverse and look like our communities, people start to feel our businesses obsolete because we cannot market to those businesses. So I would say you have to be intentional. We definitely have started being intentional, but we also can do better. Just like all of us can, we can do better and looking at it across the entire company and making sure that we have options for those teammates who are in our lower levels to also be able to move up in our organization. We started a new program called Emerge, which we are very intentional, make sure that was a diverse group of people that are also going to be kind of possibly the new leaders in our organization and giving them the skills that they need to be able to grow in our organization. So those are a couple of things that we're doing.
All sound great, Tamika. And I'll just add that when we did our strategic plan in 2019 and talked about diversity, equity, inclusion being a real important thing for us to support our banks with, when it came to leadership, and I mentioned our goal was to support banks to build a more diverse future leadership, we realized that the things we do today are what will impact a different tomorrow. And so we have to understand that, you know, that it's being consistent and doing all those things, including everything you just mentioned, as very intentional steps to make sure that we have more and more diversity with every day, week, month, year that passes. Who else would like to share on this topic real quickly before we move to the next question? Paul, let me pick on you, because you mentioned earlier that and you said that you know, a diverse leader. You were talking about the context of Black History Month and Black leaders in finance, banking, et cetera, but really across the board in terms of diversity, seeing more diversity in leaders shows those in any given category of race, ethnicity, et cetera, all the various forms of diversity that Denise talked about, that's an opportunity that will be available to me one day as well. So what thoughts do you have about how we bridge the, you know, from today to tomorrow into a more diverse leadership in the future?
Yeah, so a couple of things. So first, I think I love what Tamika was talking about the how brave the organization is in slowing down the hiring process until it's equipped with diverse candidates. And I think that, you know, part of that process is just having metrics in place. You know, I want to go back to that. So Dr. King in his The Other America speech, he says, it may be true that morality cannot be legislated, but behavior can be regulated. And so he talks about, and then he goes on and gives these examples of let's put some practices in place because not everybody's gonna get there with their heart right away first, right? And so when we're talking about building leadership, sometimes the idea that has been around for a while is to have goals, have metrics in place and let the practice of doing that begin to work on the heart, begin to chip away. So there's another saying that a rising tide lifts all ships. If you learn how to intentionally recruit and promote and advance women or people of color or people from the LGBTQ plus community, you will then have a blueprint where you could begin to just do that across the board. But it takes, we won't always get there from a heart space. And so just figuring out other ways to move the needle, to start the process, I think is just a few things to keep in mind.
Excellent. Any other thoughts? Okay, this is kind of a related question. And I think it's interesting. And it's this: at what point is a critical mass of diverse employees created that it enables easier recruiting of other diverse candidates? In other words, how do you find the tipping point in building diversity where you start to see momentum? And what are your thoughts, any or all of you, about how we get to that tipping point if you feel like we're not there yet? Denise, why don't we start with you?
I think there's a tipping point. I think it's continuous intentionality and continuous focus. Because when you say there's a tipping point, then there's a peak, you know, and who knows what the future will bring when we're continuing to have these conversations and more people see, I see a young Black female in banking. I see a young Black executive. I want to be that. So it's almost, you know, when I was in school and somebody would come to our to the school to teach on just future careers, it was usually military or we had, you know, attorneys. How many bankers really are intentional, except around April, I think, when we have our bankers month, to be a steady focus and a presence in schools, at elementary colleges, talking about the financial industry. So I think once people see that there's opportunity in the financial industry, that there's growth in the financial industry, that they have room for advancement, then we will have more representation within our companies because people see themselves, as Paul and Tamika and Thomas have said, here. So it's now we're looking at qualified candidates as a whole, not just, you know, where we're talking about representation. Who's qualified for that job, you automatically have a diverse pool of candidates because you now see different people see themselves working in this industry. So I don't believe there's a tipping point. I just think we have to continually work to improvement, continually look at your data to see what your data says. And it tells you whether you are improving or not. And if you're not, you know, you need to reassess. But that's my opinion. I don't think there's a tipping point. I just think we need to keep working towards being better every day.
Yeah, and I think it goes back to what we were saying in the prior question, that by being intentional and consistent, mm-hmm. maybe we'll look back one day and say, you know, those things we started doing in 2019 or 2020 or 2021 really made a huge difference. And to the extent that now it's just part of who we are, it's become an element of our culture that is indistinguishable from any other key element of our culture, right? All right, I'm gonna beg forgiveness to go over by just a few minutes. There's a wonderful comment from our chairman, Leighton Harding, that ends with heart matters most, getting back, Paul, to your comment. And I do think sometimes you have to make the decision in your head and know your heart will follow. I think that's exactly as you said. But here's the one last question. We hear about the workplace being a safe space from upper management, but many of us don't feel safe to be ourselves or speak openly. What elements make a truly safe space? And how do we create that environment where there is truly a safe space? Who'd like to start on that?
Bruce, I would just say one thing, trust. And trust is something we have to earn every day. You know, if people don't trust that the space is safe, then they're not going to talk. So what does trust look like in your organization? I think that's up to each mission statement, each intentionality, you know, every organization's intentionality on creating that safe space for our workforce.
And I think leaders have to show the long-term commitment to this to build that trust, right? Paul, did you want to add?
Or Thomas? Sorry, Thomas was getting ready to say something.
Thank you. No, I wanted to speak to the fact that it's about consistency too. And that consistency builds trust. When you say you want to have that voice and you want to hear, you have to listen and acknowledge at that point, because whatever happens after that is based upon what occurred. You know, did you listen? Did you acknowledge? Did anything happen? Once you have that consistency, then trust continues to build. And then from there, you're always going to have that opportunity. And that's all we're really trying to strive for, is just to get the opportunity to hear what's going on so we can make that change.
Excellent.
And I would say just real quick, two things that you could do to build the trust that Denise was talking about. One is learn, and the second is listen, right? So if I need to learn about the LGBTQ plus community, my first stop shouldn't be asking my friend, hey, tell me about you, like, because we have Google, right? We have the internet. So do some learning, listen to a podcast or something, but then listen, because the answers a lot of times are right there, where people are saying, this practice is hurting me, or I'm very alone being the only person like me in this organization. They're saying it, but we haven't listened effectively in the past. So, and by listening effectively, meaning, well, not coming back with response and saying, I don't know how to do this, or that's not my gift space. Like, that's, that excuse is not effective listening, but just listening and saying, that's great information. Let me think about that for a little bit and get back to you on if there's something that I can do differently, right? Like, that's what effective listening is. So I think learning and effectively listening to people whose voices have not been amplified or heard.
Tamika, last word, safe space.
Well, I think pretty much as everything has been said, you know, I think the one of the most important things was the listening and then responding. You know, when you hear that there is it's okay, you're going to make mistakes. You know, people will not say the right thing all the time, but also listening and learning from that and actually responding to that with empathy and doing something different. Mm-hmm. I think that is the most important thing. People look for your actions, not what you say.
Which gets us right back to where Denise started on trust, building trust. Thank you all so much. This has been outstanding, truly. And we really appreciate the contributions all four of you have made and all the comments and questions. And I'll just close by saying spring, because then I'm three seasons away from winter. Everybody have a great day, week, and Black History Month. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.